So today we're going to talk about the first Crusades. So of course everybody knows about these with the knights and everything like that. So you see here with the picture of a famous Crusade knight. All right, we're going to go to the next one here. So the first person we got to talk about is Pope Urban II in 1195. So Pope Urban II in November of 1095, you should have an article that you read about this called the Pope Urban II handout. So make sure you're reading this. It'll kind of talk about his speech that we're going to discuss as we go through here. So let's go ahead and go to the next one. So this is the Byzantine Empire. This is what you would notice would be what Constantinople and what Rome turned into. You can see Constantinople there between the Mediterranean and the Black Sea. So the Byzantines now control this. Rome no longer exists. This is Byzantine Emperor or the Empire. So let's click again. You'll zoom into Constantinople here. This is a picture of Emperor Alexis. He's the leader of the Orthodox Church, which is Christianity, just a very strict sect of Christianity, still around today. So different, didn't fully believe or did not believe in the Pope whatsoever, was his own ruler of the Orthodox Church. So he sent a letter to Pope Urban, which was very unusual, in March of 1095. So if you click again, you'll get back to the Pope Urban picture. This is where the speech, the handout from Pope Urban comes into play and the importance of everything that Pope Urban does. So we'll click again. And so we have this thing of go to war or not. So why would people go to war? What benefits do they have of going to war? And the first one, of course, comes from Pope Urban's letter that of no matter what they do, any Christian that goes on crusade against these vile race of people that he calls would get automatic remissions of sin and get a golden ticket straight to heaven. This was a big deal back then. People didn't have much to look forward to, and Christianity was everything to them. You could be a rapist, a murderer, a thug, and go on crusade and completely redeem yourself and have an eternal life forever just because you went on crusade. So it was very enticing to people of all economic levels, the rich and the poor, a way to get into the highest level of greatness that a human being in their mind could be, an eternal happiness and eternal salvation. Okay, another reason to go to war is that, well, you could raise your rank. As we saw in feudalism, there's not a lot of chance for people to raise their rank up. You're usually stuck as a peasant or a serf your entire life, and not a lot of chance to move up to be a knight or a lord or a king, of course. So if you went on crusade, you would have the ability to do that. You would have the ability to, you know, honestly kill people and then take their stuff, which would then increase your wealth, increase your power. So it's enticing to a lot of people. People are on the middle rung and want to become more powerful, become lords, or even maybe the possibility of a king of their own domain somewhere else. They could do that. That possibility was there. Now, the chances of it, not very high, but it could happen. It was a outcome that was possible. So let's go ahead and go to the next one. So we've decided to go to war. Now, how do we get there? What are our abilities to go to war? So we click a couple times here, get past this arrow. We got a natural one, people says here, are horses. Well, yeah, horses are a great idea. However, only rich people have horses back then. Horses are a very expensive commodity, hard to get a hold of, not easy to maintain. So only the rich people had horses. So more than likely, you and I, or 90% of the people that are going on these crusades, are walking. You're going to walk the whole way. So if you click again, so this is what we're doing. So you see the Forrest Gump picture of us walking. That is majority of how people got there. If animals were used by non-rich individuals, non-powerful individuals, they're mainly there to pull things, pull wagons and carts and so on. So go ahead and go to the next one. So who's going to come with us? Who are the individuals that are going to decide to go on crusade with us in this adventure, in reality of genocide? So we click again. It's going to be, well, more than the amount of people that fit in the entire Levi Stadium where the 49ers currently play. Click again. That's twice as much almost as AT&T where the Giants play. And click again. That's three times the size of South Lake Tahoe. That's roughly about 75,000 people will pick up and leave to go on crusade. The entire villages will pick up and leave and not come back potentially. Some will come back and some will stay. But entire villages pack up and go. Men, women, children. Of course, predominantly we're talking men, the fighting kind. However, women would go too. Men would want to be accompanied by women. Women back then ran a lot of the housekeeping things, the cooking of the meals, such like that. So everybody would go from every class, from every region, anybody would go, and they'd use this call as God's will to move them. But the reality is, it was the selfish needs as well for monetary needs and power. So click again here. So how far do you have to travel? If we decide that we are going to go and help the Byzantines, which was in Pope Urban's call, how far are we going to have to travel by foot that we've realized? So we click again. Well, it's about 3,000 miles door to door. That's a one-way trip. 3,000 miles we're going to have to walk. So that's quite some distance. So if you click again, you can see what it actually looks like. That's the same distance of going from right here in South Tahoe all the way to Boston on foot. That's ridiculous. It's a little bit further. That's only 2,940 miles. It's a super long way. I mean, imagine all the climates that you have to go over, the deserts, the mountains, the plains, the forests, the wetlands, everything you have to do to get there. The winters, of course. Huge, massive distances. Click again. So how long would it take you to walk 3,000 miles? Some people say a month, 60 days, a couple months, maybe at most a year. Well, if you click, you can see here, it's going to take them 3 years to get all the way to Jerusalem. 3 years to get that 3,000 miles. That's a huge amount of time. Now you understand when people like picked up and left, it's a life commitment that you're making. 3 years is a huge chunk of life back then. And life expectancy we were talking about was like in the 30s. So that's 10% of your life that you're giving away just in the traveling to go do what you were hoping to accomplish. So click again here. In that time, you could build 3 Empire State Buildings. Click again. You could build 3 Titanics and sink 3 Titanics. Of course, it didn't take this Titanic very long to sink, but it did take it a long time for it to be built. Click again here. So here you have a little video that I would like you to watch about the beginning and who goes on crusades. So I'll pause here for a minute, and you can pause the audio on it. Okay, you should have just watched 2 videos from the Crescent and the Cross, which that video is also in our video section or in the resources section, one of the 2. Highly recommend watching it. Very interesting. A lot more detail than I will provide you in class about what these people are like and what some of the hostilities of the Crusades are. So after you click there, you should have this big green and multicolorful map. It says the Near East of 1135. So it's a little bit later than what we're talking about, but the map still works quite well for us. So we're going to talk about some of the specific things that happened on the First Crusade after they encountered the Byzantines and moved down south towards Jerusalem and their pilgrimage there. So this is where things get a little ugly as you see as you click to the next one. So click again. So we're going to go to Edessa we're going to talk about first. So in Edessa, you click again. So we have what's known as Baldwin's Treachery. So you can see there the old fortifications of Edessa are still up. A lot of these castles and forts are still around today. So click around. So Baldwin, remember, he was one of the guys that were one of the leaders of the Crusade, Godfrey's brother. Remember, he was not so great as a priest, had too much fun with women, and then also loved to fight and kill people. So not what you'd call the greatest leader nor the greatest priest. So this is a Christian region ruled by Christians. So none of these people are considered infidels at all. But as we saw in the video with the Crusaders killing Jews along the way in Europe, they, of course, get a little bit overzealous of what they're doing in their mission. So what happened is Baldwin came in and said, I will promise to protect you, king, if you will adopt me and make me ruler. Well, the king's a little, skeptical about this whole deal. But, Baldwin's got a pretty big army with him. So what are you going to do? Say no? If you say no, you're going to have a violent outcome. So, of course, he says yes, afraid of Baldwin naturally. So we'll click again and see what happens here. Well, this is what Baldwin does. He plots to kill the king, of course, as we can expect. The king learns about this and he tries to escape. He captures the king and he kills him. Well, since Baldwin is his adopted son, he is now the king of the Edessa area. So already not very Christian-like, not really following the rules that were set out. Things are kind of going off the rails already by one of the leaders here. So go ahead and click again. So we're back to our map and we'll click in. Now we have Antioch. So in Antioch, the Christians siege the city, which means they attack it. So you can see everybody, Antioch had a big walled city like that. And then these armies would be outside of it constantly trying to barrage and get into the city. with a lot of difficulty. It's hard to attack a city, especially a walled city. It takes a long, long time. Sometimes it even takes over a year. Huge amounts of effort and exhaustion that goes with it. But eventually, usually the sieging army wins because the people inside the castle run out of resources, or there's disease, or whatever it is. So let's click again. So they were at this siege for 8 months. 8 months just attacking one city over and over every day, every day. So click again. And then we see finally they're able to attack and break through. They climb the walls here with ladders. Finally break through and get into the city. Click again. And the Christian invaders, the Crusaders, massacre every single person that is there. Women, Jews, Christians, children. I mean, they're murdering Christians. They were indiscriminate to anybody. Anybody that was in that city, they absolutely destroyed. Every living thing was gone, brutalized. And this was a new tactic that had not been used by other militaries in the past when this land had been taken over. People were not persecuted particularly for their religion. They might have had to pay a tax. However, they weren't killed for it. It was like a common understood truce. However, this is one of the instances where that did not happen. Everybody was laid to waste. So next one. So, well, in return, what happens? Well, people of that region, the Muslim individuals, Muslim faith, and then, of course, the Arabs of that region rise up and they attack the Crusaders in that city as retribution. So, of course, if you click again, what's going to be natural of that? The Crusaders become scared. They understand what happened. They understand what they did, and that if these people, this new attacking army, gets into their city, that they're going to die the same way that they killed everybody when they came in. So they need something to get them going. So they click again. We get this. You get a picture of Jesus Christ and someone stabbing him. This is what we want to talk about here is called the Spear of Destiny or Spear of Longinus, which is the gentleman who is stabbing Jesus Christ in this depiction. The Spear of Destiny is the spear that this Roman soldier Longinus is carrying. They use to stab Jesus to quicken the death. So what happens is a priest goes digging into an abandoned church in the city while they're being sieged. He was told to do so by God, is the claim. While digging there, if you click again, he discovers one of these objects. This is supposed to be the same object, the head of the Spear of Destiny or the Spear of Longinus. He claims that he finds it. The Spear of Destiny is supposed to give untold power and ability to those who maintain it. It was such a believed in object that even Hitler looked for it in the 40s. It has been long sought after throughout all of history. So this priest magically finds it and shows all the Crusaders. The Crusaders then, going with the theme of God wills it, this is God's true calling, rally and say, yeah, this is truly God's will that we survive and do this, and oh, how perfect it is that he found this. God told him to do that. So click again. So what they do is they actually win. They're able to defeat the Muslim army and hold back with the belief that the Spear of Destiny helped them through this. Kind of seems unrealistic. There's no way to historically prove that that's exactly what that spear was or if it was actually found. But the Crusaders, did actually win the battle and were able to survive. So if you click again, now we move on to where it says Murat al-Numan. You can see the old stronghold of Murat al-Numan. So the Crusaders come up and they offer peace terms to the people of Murat al-Numan. And of course, they say yes, because they've seen now in the previous city in Antioch that if they didn't, that they would siege the city and eventually kill everybody. So they decide to go with it and say, yes, we surrender. Come on in. There will be no battle. And the Crusader said that they would allow everybody to live if they would do that. Well, click again, and this is what they do. They absolutely murder everybody in the city. No peace is given. The truce is absolutely broken. As soon as they let them in, they begin murdering and killing everybody. Click again, and now you see that there's a little bit more. They begin torturing people in Murat al-Numan. You can see people being burned alive, being filleted, things like that. So the reports is that not only did they just kill people, they begin to murder and torture them. And of course, that's not nearly enough in this circumstance. So click again. It's even believed that they started cannibalizing people, started eating them. Cannibalization, of course, you would find as highly disturbing and disgusting, which it absolutely is. But there was an actual belief to a purpose behind it and an impact to it. So if you click again, I'll tell you, well, you got a little video of Macaulay Culkin there, just kind of goofing off. But this is what it did. So if you click again, it says, this struck fear into the heart's enemy. If you were sitting in an opposing city on the way in front of this crusader army and you heard that not only are they winning battles, that they are killing everybody and torturing them, now they're eating people, that's going to scare you. It shows that these people have no limits. They have no moral angst to stop of what they're doing, no moral point. It makes them look like devils, which is ironic because that's what Pope Urban called the people of this land, is that they were devil worshipers. However, the people there believe that the Christians are because they are actually literally eating people. And it also goes to show you the fervor and the craziness of the Crusader army, that if the leaders didn't get them to Jerusalem, they had a huge problem on their hand, that they couldn't control this army in themselves. So they knew that they had to make it there, or it could be their own lives that are at risk. So go ahead, click again. So back to our map. So we got to talk about the major part, and this is, click again, Jerusalem. 3 years and 3,000 miles later, they finally get to Jerusalem. Jerusalem, a huge major walled city. It is the crown jewel of the Holy Land, where all the crusaders wanted to be because of the famous references with Jesus and all the other holy landmarks there. So click again. Well, what happens is, well, you see a video of someone being so excited. That's what must have been like when they finally made it there. So if you click after that, out of the 75,000 people that started off, only about 13,000 are left. So we've lost a huge portion of the military and the people that decided to go with on this crusade. A huge portion of are gone. So we're down to only 13,000 people from 75,000. That's still a lot, though, but it's far less than what we had. So if you click again, you get this. This is a picture of a siege tower. These are built to, of course, go over the walls of castles. You can see the people would run up inside. There's ladders in them, and people are protected from oncoming spears and arrows and anything else, rocks that they would drop on them. So the crusaders need to build these. However, unfortunately for them, the people of Jerusalem had cut down all of the trees within a huge swath of land around Jerusalem, so the crusaders could not build these siege towers. But another sort of crazy story that happens is apparently another priest walks into the desert, is told by God to dig a hole, and lo and behold, he finds thousands upon thousands of cut down, perfectly utilized trees buried under the ground. And yet again, the crusaders believe that it's God's will that this miracle happened. They must invade Jerusalem. So click again, and you see that they finally attack. So you can see those siege towers in use and all the fire. So the crusaders attack Jerusalem. Click again. And the result is that they slaughter 30,000 people in less than a mile. The crusaders are able to win and just indiscriminately kill everybody that they can within a square mile. Think about a mile. Is that four laps around a track. And think about now 30,000 bodies spread out over that amount of space. That's not a lot of space for that amount of bodies. It is recorded in quotes that it was so bad that the blood on the streets was 3 feet deep at points. I mean, that's how much blood had been spilled. It's ridiculous. I mean, they're completely indiscriminately killing people. And that's going to have massive impacts as they go forward. So if you click again, you have Godfrey is offered to be king. He is the leader of the Crusader army. They offer him to be king. Click again. He then, of course, denies it and says, no, thank you. But then they put in his brother Baldwin to become king, and everybody remembers him for the treachery, the betrayal, and then, of course, his previous life experiences of not doing such great things. So click, you get the last one. The big lasting impact of the First Crusade is that the Christians control the Holy Land. The Crusades were a success. They achieved everything that Pope Urban wanted and that Crusaders wanted. But of course, there was huge tolls and huge ramifications and impacts that were yet to come. But the big thing is that Christians are in control of the Holy Land. All right, thanks for listening.